You're tuned to WFHB.
Volunteer powered.
Listener supported.
Community radio for South Central Indiana.
Welcome to WFHB's Daily Local News.
Written and produced entirely by volunteers from the Bloomington community and supported by the generosity of listeners like you.
Good afternoon from the studios of Community Radio 91.3 FM. Reporting live for WFHB, this is Barbara Fuqua.
And I'm Scott Weddle. This is the Daily Local News for Wednesday, August 1st, 2018.
Cognizant of, hey, you know, there are issues and needs that you may not be affected by that other people are. And this is a way that I don't think has been done before to draw the attention to those issues.
With just 97 days left until midterm elections, WFHB News Director Wes Martin speaks with Bloomington Black Lives Matter activist Vox Booker about their upcoming candidate roundtable. That discussion coming up later in the program.
Young people are twice as likely as the elderly to fall victim to fraudulent financial schemes, and even the federal government falls victim to the fraud at times. As financial scams become more sophisticated, our weekly Consumer Watchdog segment, Better Beware, keeps you up to date and knowledgeable on how to protect your finances. Better Beware is coming up later in the program, but first, your daily headlines.
Monroe County Community School Corporation administrators looked to the community last night for input on whether to add metal detectors to their school safety strategy. But even after the community conversation, administrators aren't committed to implementing them. Governor Holcomb announced in early July that schools can receive one handheld metal detector for every 250 students. This tactic to shore up school safety comes in the wake of a May 25th shooting at Noblesville West Middle School. Noblesville West students returned to class today. Schools had to order the detectors from the Indiana Department of Administration by July 19 to receive them by mid-August. But MCCSC officials aren't convinced of their usefulness. According to Assistant School Superintendent Andrea Mobley, MCCSC has looked to the Indiana State Department for Education for guidance.
Based on the guidance that we have received from them, there is no evidence that says that the use of metal detectors in school is beneficial. And actually, there's some research that suggests that it might be detrimental to students' perception of safety in the building.
Community members submitted their questions on cards to Mobley, who read them out loud last night. Here are two concerns read by Mobley and addressed by MCCSC Superintendent Judy Nemuth.
This person says, I'm concerned about the use of these scanners and how they will be used. They can't possibly be used every day on every person entering the building. So in what capacity could they be useful? Other than the idea of hardening our schools, are there other gun safety measures you would be willing to consider, such as gun safety education for grown-ups?
Yes, in fact, we have a person that is going to be working with us on gun safety. I think, Dr. Pillar, you may have used that person last year, possibly with your parents, to talk about gun safety in the home. And so that's obviously another very proactive measure.
Could scanners cause a security risk by delaying entry to buildings or requiring large numbers of students to wait together in one place?
Absolutely, without a doubt.
One recurring concern was how to prevent implicit bias when determining who gets scanned. Superintendent Demuth put her faith in school administrators.
Well, the great thing is our administrators do have a lot of training, and quite frankly, that's a very last resort that they have to use. And so we use a lot of other things prior to getting to that point. And if in fact they're involved in a search, they'll have one of our resource officers there. And if there's any apprehension of them doing the search, someone else would do it that wouldn't feel comfortable with the techniques and the protocols and how to talk with the child. Because again, remember, we're dealing with children.
School Resource Officer Jim Whitmer also sought to reassure audience members.
In addition to our normal police training, which is extremely extensive, a particular piece of the school resource officer training is about implicit bias and all the parts and pieces that go along with that as well. So again, you know, law enforcement may not always get the best news of the day, but generally speaking, we are used to dealing with all kinds of people of various backgrounds and cultures.
Mobley says MCCSC has been proactive in implementing safety measures over the last 8 years, and she detailed numerous steps the school district has taken. Those include limiting the number of entries to the buildings, locking doors during the school day, and buzzing people in. Mobley says all administrative offices have emergency buttons and that students, teachers, and even the transportation department have conducted active shooter drills.
And we have video surveillance in our secondary schools, and we're also slowly getting that into our elementary schools, and we hope to have that done very soon.
Another aspect of safety plan support of the safety plan supports the students' social and emotional health in an effort to prevent school shooter situations. Most recently, the school has added social workers, another nurse, and a part-time clinical psychologist. Assistant Superintendent Mark K. Winston says administrators believe strongly in a preventative approach.
Making sure that our students feel connected, that our students are in fact engaged, and making sure that we are proactively providing them with the necessary skills and knowledge so that they in fact understand how to interact, they know how to manage their feelings and emotions, and they know how to communicate with their peers as well as other members within the community.
Despite her hesitancy to add metal detectors to safety measures, Superintendent DeMuth noted there could be repercussions for not including them.
If we did have an incident like we've seen around the country and we didn't have them and the governor offered to give them to us free, the first thing those parents would say is that you had an opportunity to have a scanner and because you didn't use it, that's why you had the problem.
In closing, DeMuth says the school's approach to safety is still evolving and the school corporation remains open to community input.
No one can give us the answer, but we're going to do our very best to plug the gap, so to speak, because every day it is critically important. We have our most precious resource in our children, our staff members, and we have to make sure that they're safe. And trust me, last year after February through the end of the school year, there wasn't a day, an hour, a minute that went by that we weren't all on our toes constantly, you know, thinking a person would come around the corner and shoot somebody. And I'm just being very honest. It was horrible. The pressure and stress of that was incredible. You know, I keep saying to our folks, you know, we're excited about starting this school year, and we are excited. But after seeing what happened at the second half of last school year, if you have any thoughts on, you know, a better way, we're certainly willing to hear those.
MCCSC students go back to school next Wednesday.
The Urban Land Institute, or ULI, has just released the draft of their recommendations for the redevelopment of the IU Hospital site on 2nd Street. At the top of its list is housing. Bloomington's housing market has the highest prices in the state, but it lacks workforce housing and low-income rentals for seniors, young adults, and artists. The graphic provided by the ULI depicts varied housing on the backside of the current Bloomington Hospital site. It includes single-family homes and a section of condos for young professionals. The ULI placed a market value of around $135,000 to $300,000 on the condos. In a public discussion yesterday, Monroe County Commissioner Amanda Barge balked at the range, saying it's not affordable for many area residents. Bloomington Mayor John Hamilton says he's committed to expanding housing affordability across all income levels.
You know, we have a choice to make about what kind, how much subsidy to try to put into this, besides the cost of the land, which we will control, that can really change the dynamic on affordability, whether through tax credits or other incentives or abatements or direct incentives or other ways that we want to adjust what the market would otherwise do.
Former Bloomington Mayor Tommy Allison urged city officials to retain ownership of the land as a tool to ensure long-term affordability. Other ULI recommendations include restoring a street grid and using the property to link area neighborhoods and green spaces. Deputy Mayor Mick Reniason said ULI envisions what's referred to as a living street running east-west to the B line with the potential for gathering places in green spaces.
You'll have to imagine that going across the B line in front of Kroger and connecting with Seminary Park, but there's some possibilities that something like that could happen. And if you can close your eyes and imagine that for a second, that's pretty cool to imagine that kind of green corridor extending all the way from what now is a series of buildings.
The second street side of the site could see some office and retail space, as well as an arts community center. The ULI also recommends the city keep the hospital's 400-space parking garage to serve as the potential office and retail spaces. Reniason values the garage as an $8 million asset. The city has already put out a request for qualifications for a master developer to coordinate the redevelopment of the site. Mayor Hamilton and Deputy Mayor Mick Reniason say the request for qualifications was issued, quote, just to see who's out there. That RFQ closes Friday. Mayor Hamilton says the master developer could be responsible for public engagement on the project. City Council member Chris Sternbaum represents the district where the hospital is located. He questioned whether that would be a conflict of interest for the developer. The Hospital Site Reutilization Steering Committee Chair Vi Simpson gave committee members the option to stay involved as the project takes shape over the coming decade. IU Health is projected to leave and demolish the current hospital site sometime in the year 2022. The actual build-out of the repurposed site could go into 2024. A contractor will pay $10,000 in fines after a member was killed at an Indiana University job site in April. The Indiana lawyer reports rock-solid masonry was cited with four serious violations after a 35-year-old worker was killed when a 1,600-pound limestone slab fell on him. The limestone slab was being lifted above the interior door at IU Bloomington's Swain Hall. Bloomington-based rock-solid masonry was cited for improper use of a winch and failing to instruct employees. A spokesperson with the Indiana Department of Labor says the company has addressed noncompliance issues and agreed to additional safety training for its workers. The Indiana lawyer reports that a separate wrongful death suit filed in May has been settled. Reporting live for WFHB, I'm Barbara Fuqua.
And I'm Scott Weddle. Support for WFHB comes from Cardinal Spirits Distillery, located on the B line. Cardinal Spirits has opened a new kitchen featuring local seasonal food made from scratch to complement their craft cocktails. Dinner available Tuesday through Saturday at Cardinal Spirits, 922 South Morton Street.
Bloomington Black Lives Matter will host a candidate forum early next month. As activist Volkshall tells WFHB News Director Wes Martin, the candidate roundtable offers a chance for members of the black community to ask questions on issues important to them.
I'm here with Vox Booker. You are an activist and a member of Bloomington Black Lives Matter. Vox, what can you tell us about this upcoming roundtable that Bloomington Black Lives Matter is hosting? It's called A Seat at the Table, and that's coming up in September. So what can you tell us?
Well, the title Seat at the Table comes from the Representative Shirley Chisholm quote, if they don't give you a seat at the table, bring a folding chair. So what we're doing is essentially asking for a seat at the table. We've invited candidates from the local, state, and federal level. Liz Watson has already accepted. We're waiting to hear back from Trey Hollingsworth. Joe Donnelly and Mike Blum. So we'll be hosting it at 2 days at two separate locations. The first day will be with the more local candidates at the Universal Unitarian Church. It goes from 10 a.m. to 9 p.m. The second day will be on the 9th at the Buzzcook Chumley, and that goes from 2 p.m. to 10 p.m.
And then that second day is more federal. That's the Watson, possibly Hollingsworth, both of those candidates would be discussing, and then incumbent Democratic Senator Joe Donnelly and Republican challenger Mike Braun, if they get back to you. When did this all come together, and why is it important for Bloomington Black Lives Matter to host this kind of discussion?
Well, Black Lives Matter from the beginning has been engaged in dialogue with elected officials, and it's important that we keep them cognizant of, hey, you know, there are issues and needs that you may not be affected by that other people are. And this is a way that I don't think has been done before to draw the attention to those issues. Sometimes it's the fact that many of these elected officials have never even been asked questions specifically about Black folks creates a new dimension of thinking. And hopefully when they know better, they do better.
And what would be some of those issues that you think would be brought up to either local or federal officials, like the questions that are pertinent to Black folks?
Well, I can't give away the cheat code, so to say, the questions yet, but it would be things that are important to Black health, welfare, safety, looking at the criminalization system that we have, voter disfranchisement, things along the line of state-sponsored violence, such as, you know, the continuing tragedy of Black folks, you know, being shot while unarmed, things such as folks being disenfranchised from voting and not being aware that now in Indiana, you know, when you're released from prison, that you are allowed to vote. It's to heighten awareness, to get the public involved, and hopefully to make sure that we have a good voter turnout.
Just to talk a little bit more about the candidates, and again, this A Seat at the Table roundtable discussion is going on Friday, September 7th at the Unitarian Universalist Church in Bloomington. You've got Matt Pierce coming in and several other Democrats, and also a couple Republican challengers in there as well. And I'm wondering, does Black Lives Matter endorse any particular candidates, or do they have to say the right thing in order to get a Black Lives Matter endorsement?
You know, so we're a nonpartisan group and we don't endorse candidates. Actually, this this event is being funded by several groups. The Monroe Black Democrats were being funded by the Monroe County Democratic Party, and were being funded by the Republican Party, so to say, for Monroe. So it's a bipartisan event. It's exactly about bringing both sides to the table to engage in dialogue, because that's really the only way that we push our issues. We can't attack it from a one-sided a vantage point, because we're not only able going to have one party in office.
What is the format for these discussions? Does everybody just kind of go at once, or how exactly is this set up?
So the ideal setup of this is that we have four people at a table. You have two opposing candidates. Obviously, one is likely to be the incumbent. And you have a core council member of Black Lives Matter, someone like myself, and you have a community figure that's already been engaged in doing this type of work. Some of the people we have are Professor Anita Miles, Brandon Drake, Jim Sims, and you know, Mr. Jose Azeo.
Okay, Bloomington City Council mm-hmm. member Jim Sims, and Monroe County Black Democratic Caucus President William Hosea, yeah.
Yes.
So is there going to be an opportunity, for example, for like a public question or a Q&A time?
If both candidates were inclined, we would be open to do that. But we've pre-generated these questions, and they'll have them several weeks in advance. So I don't want to have it folks feel like they were ambushed, but I want to make sure that we assert our issues as Black people.
Again, going back to it, what would some of those issues be? For example, mm-hmm. not to give anything away, but you had mentioned health, incarceration, anything mm-hmm. else?
Yeah, I think that one of the big things that we're talking about now, and that people don't often think of being a Black issue, is immigration.
Anything else going on with Bloomington Black Lives Matter? Let's first see, is there anything else that you want folks to know about A Seat at the Table, this upcoming roundtable discussion?
I think it's important that that the allies that we have in the community step forward to help us pull this event off and make it a success, and make it something that we can continue to repeat in the future, and help to shift the culture in Bloomington. To answer your next question about, is there anything else exciting that Black Lives Matter are doing? The thing that we just launched last night is the necessity drive. We're doing a necessity drive to gather supplies for organizations such as Shalom, Middle Way, All Options, the Indiana Cavalry Alliance. We're just getting basic daily needs of life together. We have several drop-off points, one being at the seat of the table, and there's another day at the back door, and we'll be releasing some other locations. If you ever want to know what Black Lives Matter is doing, all you have to do is go to our Facebook page, and you can find lots of great things. We also just launched a website. You can find that from the Facebook page as well.
And again, just to clarify, what exactly is a necessity drive? You're just gathering items for these different area organizations?
Yeah, so it's the necessities of daily living, the thing that everyone takes for granted, whether it be that toothbrush that you need to make sure your smile is on point in the morning, or feminine hygiene products, or wet wipes. We have a whole wish list on Amazon that you can actually see. But even if it's just an alcohol swab, things that we take for granted in just our privileged daily lives.
So Necessity Drives was launched last night. The mm-hmm. website is new. Anything else going on? Any other initiatives?
We always have some stuff in the pipeline. We are always working on police overform. We'll be planning to launch a task force on policing and intersectionality next month with the city council. So lots of exciting things. Folks should make sure that they go ahead and like our Facebook page.
And what exactly is the police intersectionality? Did that come from Bloomington Black Lives Matter, or was that a city council initiative?
We plan to be sponsored by city council folks to launch the initiative. Any city council person can launch a task force. And the goal would be to launch it. Task force that eventually turns into a standing committee that has some of the weight of law behind it. It came out of the need to make sure that Bloomington is engaged in best practices. We have a phenomenal amount of resources at all there here in Bloomington. We have IU and just some of the greatest minds. And we need to make sure that we gather as a community and offer support to our police force to make sure that they're not being overburdened and that we're helping them as a community, because that's really part of our civic duty. One of the ways that we're doing this is that we have another campaign called Make the Right Call that we'll be launching as well, that helps folks understand when you should call the police. I spent a lot of time with Bloomington Police Chief Dekoff, and let's be honest, folks often use, especially white folks, call the police like it's a customer service line. And we have other options in our community that don't tax the police, that don't expect them to be social workers, or the myriad of other things that police officers are expected to do in our community. A simple example is often if someone elderly falls down, they call 911, and you end up with an ambulance, a fire truck, and four police cars. And really, all a grandparent may need or an elderly person is to know that they can call 911 and just simply ask for a lift assist. It's a service that the community pays for, and they can simply send a small team out to help them up if there's no injuries. And it saves the community money, and it helps the police not be overtaxed.
You had mentioned not trying to burden the police, but is this also a service?
Well, yeah, any call that's unfounded, it would be the type of call that we want to make sure that we target with the Do Not Call campaign. I'm sorry, it's Make the Right Call. So we do not want folks to make frivolous calls. We want them to know what service is the best service in their situation.
Anything else you have to add, or anything else that you'd like folks to know about?
Wes, I think I've given folks so much. Once again, I'll mention that we have a active Facebook page and an active web page. Look both of those up. All you have to do is look for Bloomington Black Lives Matter. You'll see us there. And Wes, thank you for your time once again.
Vox Booker with Bloomington Black Lives Matter. Again, we were talking about A Seat at the Table, this roundtable discussion that is coming up on Friday, September 7th, and again on Sunday, September 9th, featuring Democratic and Republican candidates. We're 97 days from midterm elections. Look forward to being there. Vox, thank you so much for coming in.
Absolutely, Wes. I look forward to seeing you.
Support for WFHB comes from listeners like you and from the IU Health Foundation, where local gifts stay local, serving patients for a healthier Bloomington.
The Daily Local News is brought to you by MPI Solar, a Bloomington business specializing in solar hot water, solar electricity, and solar hot air systems. MPI Solar designs and installs solar power generation systems that encourage independence and individual responsibility. Found locally at 812-334-4003 and on the web at mpisolarenergy.com.
Up next, our weekly consumer watchdog segment, Better Beware.
Welcome to Better Beware. Here's your consumer watchdog from WFHB Community Radio with the latest information and helpful hints designed to keep your head out of the clouds, your feet on the ground, and your money in your pocket.
Humor can be a touchstone for truth, because nothing is funny unless it relates in some way or other to something that is true, or at least is perceived to be true. That's one reason why so many people these days like to get their news from Stephen Colbert, Trevor Noah, and Saturday Night Live. And maybe why extreme right-wing stand-up comics haven't attracted such big audiences. Mark Twain was one of America's greatest humorists, and he said, quote, "It ain't what you don't know that gets you into trouble. It's what you know for sure that just ain't so." End of quotation and beginning of rueful laughter. The Federal Trade Commission issued a study back in 2016 that showed individuals, companies, and governments are losing thousands of billions of dollars to scammers every year. That's a ginormous increase since their first studies back in 1991, and they established that anybody and everybody can fall victim to modern con artists. They found that younger people are twice as likely to get suckered as elderly people, although older folks typically lose a lot more money when they fall for a flimflam. These days, the fraudsters aren't shady characters who pull passersby into a dark doorway. They're highly organized teams who reach out worldwide from places like Jamaica, Costa Rica, Canada, and Nigeria. But when they touch you, they're likely to appear local. That's one way they boost their credibility, along with using the names of well-known legitimate companies and using legal-sounding language. Right now, you need to watch out for phone calls about a computer problem at Social Security. They want your Social Security number to verify your account. Right. Work-from-home scams are big, too. They promise a job, even babysitter jobs, send a fake check and ask you to send some back. Or they want you to buy some merchandise to ship, promising you'll get reimbursed. Of course, they don't. 4,000 people complained to the Better Business Bureau about that one just last year. And one poor sucker in Cleveland, Ohio, got taken for 47,000 smackers. They're targeting people who play online video games, even kids, like Fortnite. A player in that game's chat room conned a 13-year-old Ohio boy into giving up his username and password to get extra skins, whatever they are, and promptly shut down his game account and his email account and accessed his mom's credit card. Fortnite is huge. It has hundreds of millions of players, and there are scads of fake Fortnite versions and apps out there that can install all kinds of nasty malware on an unsuspecting child's computer or smartphone. Junk mail, spam email, robocalls, the swindlers are out there, hitting on all of us every day. It's no joke. But you know you're really in trouble if somebody steals your identity and gives it back. I'm Richard Fish for WFHB News and Public Affairs.
Better Beware comes to you from WFHB Bloomington, Indiana. Find all our episodes at WFHB.org. If you can help put the kibosh on a con, email beware@WFHB.org. Remember, swindlers never give a sucker an even break.
You've been listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB. Today's headlines were written by Wes Martin and Sarah Vaughn in partnership with CATS Community Access Television Services. Better Beware was produced by Richard Fish. Our feature was produced by Wes Martin.
Our engineer today, Jenna Jankowski. Executive producer, Wes Martin. Our theme music provided by Ben Lumsdaine, Danny Graff, and Scott Schmatke. For WFHB, this is Scott Weddle.
And I'm Barbara Fuqua. Thanks for supporting Indiana's only volunteer-powered, listener-supported, independent daily news program.
You can be a part of our award-winning news team. Send inquiries to news@WFHB.org.
Stay tuned for Hereabouts, Asian American Midwest Radio. Hereabouts is produced in partnership with the Asian Cultural Center on the campus of Indiana University, Bloomington. That's Hereabouts, Asian American Midwest Radio, coming up next on WFHB.